Good morning and welcome to All the Best on FBI Radio. My name is Jesse Cox. I'll be filling in for Eliza Salos today. Thanks also to Luke Rodley for another weekend overhang. Let's jump into our program and meet Bunny.
I've loved cooking since I was a kid, especially like our society, very patriarchal society. So the male does the money and brings the money, the woman cooks. But in my family, my father always encouraged us to go into the kitchen. He was always in the kitchen, so we as sons didn't feel bad or awkward to go in the kitchen. From that time, I enjoyed.
Bunny came to Australia 6 years ago. He initially found it quite hard to make friends, but then slowly he realised that there were many people from his own country spread out across the city. As they would meet and get together and become friends, they would also cook, and food became a big part of their get-togethers. And there was one dish in particular, that for Bunny, without fail, would remind him of home.
The most strongest emotion I can attach to the food is my mother. Whenever I eat Nepalese food, or, you know, when I get that smell or certain texture, it reminds me of my mom because I've left home since I was maybe 12, 13. It makes me happy, not sad. I mean, I miss my mom, but that shouldn't, if you miss someone, I don't think it should make you sad. It should make you happy, as in, you miss them. It's so nice. That's how I look at it.
Bunny comes from a family of entrepreneurs. His grandfather, brother, and father are all successful businessmen. He says carving out his own path in life is in his blood, along with that love of food that his father taught him from a really young age. And in Sydney, these two desires have combined, food and business. And Bunny cooks a specific Nepalese dish, the same one that reminds him of home, for a living, at markets, at festivals, all over the place.
It was like a food that's always there. Like, you're hungry? Yeah, you just go order that. You didn't really make it at home. I got more interested in this food after I came to Sydney. When I came here, I didn't know many Nepalese people, so wherever you got invited, we always end up making this food. It was a thing of being with friends, community, so that was the most good memory I have about this food.
I don't know what that food is that Bunny is talking about. It's being kept a secret from me. But just outside the studio, in FBI's very modest kitchen, we've got a microwave, a kettle, and a sandwich press. Our coffee machine at the moment is broken, so we don't have that. It's very, very simple. Well, Bunny is cooking in that kitchen that very same dish for me.
You can steam them, you can fry them, you can barbecue them, or you can deep fry them. So it depends how you want to play with it.
Why is it a secret? Well, today on All the Best, we are not just talking about food and recipes, but a very special kind of recipe. Secret ones. Bunny is cooking in the kitchen right now, and it smells pretty great. We'll talk with him a little bit later in the show, and I'll taste what that recipe is. I look forward to it. Adam Zwi also looks into his family and the role Jewish food plays in tradition. We meet an artist who began brewing her own beer for an art project and hasn't looked back since. And we have a recipe that involves drinking your own wee. It sounds a little gross, but it's a great story, so make sure you stick around. We've got a bunch of other secret recipes to share. If you have one or a story about a secret recipe, let us know. Text in 0409 945 945 or post on our Facebook. Stay tuned to your radio this morning as we talk about the secrets in recipes on All the Best. Remember to text us 0409 945 945.
It is now time for me to tell you a great tale of a woolly named Woody. Matter of fact, trivia is now. Let him tell you the tale.
I rep San Diego like an angel does a halo. I've done a couple drugs, but I tell the kids to say no. Okay, so no reason to brag about it. The path is crowded with masses that dance around it. You bastards got it? So the facts have to be shouted with messages in the beat. I'm glad you found it, so ask about it. They say Wooly needs to take a chill pill. We'll do your slang, cause apparently I'm real ill. Built a spill, cause I drink excessively. A mix is in my cup like a secret recipe. And all these ladies must be impressed with me, stressing me out.
Wooly with Secret Recipe. And on All the Best this morning, that is our theme. My name is Jesse Cox. I'm filling in for Eliza Salos. And as we talk about food and the secrets in those food, we're also asking you to tell us your secret recipe. Text in 0409 945 945 and share those stories that are as part of that food. We are talking about secret recipes and stories in those recipes. And this next story comes from Adams Wee. And when we talk about cooking, it's not just the ingredients and the method. Often there's an instinct, you know, a touch of something taught to you, handed down by families, a memory, a story. And it's not just the recipe book. It's got to be there. It's part of the family. And Adam talked to his great aunt Rose about the Jewish food of her childhood.
If you come from a Jewish Eastern European background, then you've probably heard all this before. But for those uninitiated, the world of gefilte fish, chopped herring and knedlach is probably a little weird, and maybe even exotic. Food is very important to us Jews. We eat a lot of traditional stuff that our grandparents and great-grandparents brought with them from the old country when they fled Eastern Europe in the early part of the 20th century. And we also use food to remind us of events in our collective history, usually some catastrophic existential threat that we overcame. In fact, there's a well-known saying that goes like this. All Jewish festivals are the same. They tried to kill us. We won. Now let's eat. Rose Zwie is my great aunt, and as soon as I walked into her house, she gave me some bulkas, which are sort of round cinnamon muffins, with tea. Rose is a writer, and she lives in Glebe now, but she spent most of her life in South Africa and was actually born in Mexico. Her parents had arrived there from Lithuania, hoping to get into the United States. But Rose's mum didn't really like it there. She especially didn't like all the spicy Mexican food. And so, in the late 1920s, they went to join another wing of the family in South Africa.
The food that I grew up with was Jewish Lithuanian food. And I think a lot of the food that we ate was tinged with nostalgia. It reminded them of the old country.
There were lots of Lithuanian Jews in South Africa. And like most immigrant communities, they brought the food of their old home into the new world. That meant a lot of herring, a fish that only lives in the chilly seas of the Northern Hemisphere. And then there's the chicken soup.
Chicken soup was regarded almost medicinal if anybody got really ill. And I believe the Chinese have got a similar attitude to it. They had chicken soup. They would boil the chicken until all the taste came out of it and went into the soup. And then the chicken would be braised and eaten as the main dish. And together with that was a very well-known recipe among Jews everywhere, tzimis, which is a carrot stew, which is made with carrots, potatoes, meat if you have it.
And there's knedlach, which is a German-inspired dumpling, and borscht, which is beetroot soup, and a long-standing love for the humble pickled cucumber. In fact, anything pickled would be fine.
As I was growing up, my grandmother used to do all the cooking. And besides liking the food, and I'd been brought up on it, I wanted to replicate it in some way. And I would ask her, this was when I was sort of a teenager already, and I would ask her, for the recipe. Now, a recipe is not something which is known about in Jewish immigrant culture of an earlier age. There weren't any recipe books. So when I'd say to my grandmother, how do you make a dumpling, a knedel? She'd say, well, and she'd cup her hand, you use so much meal, and about 4 spoons of water, depending on how it looked. And then you put in salt and pepper, and that's it. And I said, but isn't there a recipe? So she said, well, that's a recipe. That's what you use. And in later years, she would say to me, I don't understand your generation. Your generation does everything out of books. They cook out of books, they have babies with books, you knit from books, who knits from books? You have a look at it. It's one left, one right, and you put two together and you take it off the needle. She says, that's the way it's done. No books.
The thing about this food is that it's cooked very intuitively. Rose tells me that each family's recipe is different, never written down, passed on from generation to generation. There's no traditional or authoritative recipe per se. And in order to make this food authentic, like Rose's grandmother used to make it, you need something more than simply the correct instructions. You need a secret ingredient.
I loved her cooking, and it was more than the recipe, than any recipe can be, because I had a feeling that she cooked with love, and no recipe book can replicate that. It never tastes the same when somebody else cooks it. And as much as I would like to replicate the way my grandmother cooked, I still have some sort of nostalgia for the whole background of when I ate the food.
Rose Wee, speaking to her great-nephew, Adam, or the best contributor, about those less tangible secret ingredients which make up authentic Jewish cooking. You're tuned to All the Best this morning. It's coming up to 10:15. Our theme is all about cooking today. It's all to do with recipes, but a very special type of recipes. We want to know all about secret recipes. If you have a secret recipe of your own, let us know. Text in 0409 945 945. It could be something like the story of Adam. It could be a family secret recipe, or it could be something much simpler. We just had one listener text in and say that her secret recipe is peanut butter and banana on toast. Tell us what yours is. Text in 0409 945 945. That number again, 0409 945 945.
I remember cooking in the kitchen, recipe in my hand, stealing kisses from you, baby, while you were stirring in the pan. Tell me, why did you leave me? Why did you walk right out my door? Cooking in the kitchen, but it don't taste the same no more. If there's nothing I can take, I said, no, no. You're such a silly woman. Put the lime in the coconut and drink them both together. Put the lime in the coconut, then you feel better. Put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. Put the lime in the coconut and call me in the morning. Yes, you call me in the morning. If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do. If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do. If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do. If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do.
Harry Nilsson with Lime in the Coconut. We also heard before that a track from Yanto Shortis. He's an unsigned artist from Melbourne. And the track was about cooking in the kitchen and a bit of love. It was called In the Kitchen. My name is Jesse Cox. And on All the Best, we are talking all about secret recipes. We've just had one in from the kitchen where Bunny is cooking me his very own Nepalese secret recipe. He says, what's the secret recipe for picking up women? He says, well, just cook for them. It's something quite simple if you know how to cook. A useful bit of advice. If you want to let us know about what your secret recipe is, text in on 0409 945 945. It might be a story, it might be an anecdote, it might actually be some ingredients. A friend of mine has a famous Caesar salad recipe that has reached almost proportions of folklore. It is talked about continuously, and yet he will not tell anybody what is in it. Everyone has pried him for years and years, so please tell us what makes up that recipe. But he stands firm. The only person who has ever got slightly close to the recipe is Jim, who, after years of begging Matt to at least tell him something about the recipe, was given one ingredient and told that if we could keep that secret for another 7 years, Matt would finally reveal the secret of that Caesar salad. That was about 3 years ago, so I think Jim's got about 4 years still before he finds the secret to that recipe. With Peaches and Cream on FBI Radio. All the Best is the program you're listening to, where our theme is all about food. And not just any food, not just eating the food, but the recipes of the food and the secrets in those recipes. Our theme this morning is secret recipe. And our next story comes in the light of a secret recipe for beer. Now, before I get to beer, I want to talk about another recipe that we all probably know. Vegemite is a loved spread of pretty much everybody in Australia. It confuses people who come and taste it and revolt at it. Americans don't understand it. Many, many people laugh at the thought of Vegemite. But Vegemite first began a very close relationship with beer, because what would happen as the beer vats would be emptied of their beer and the beer would be bottled up, there'd be all this yeast down the bottom of the vats. And so people thought, well, why don't we use this yeast as something? And so they scooped it up, and that formed the beginnings of Vegemite. So when we think of beer, Vegemite is very close to our much-loved breakfast spread.
Stories from Sydney. This is All the Best on FBI.
Joel London talks to an artist who started making beer as part of an art project, but then she became so fascinated by having her own recipe and experimenting with homebrew that she hasn't been able to stop next. Now, homebrewing sometimes does have a bit of a bad name. Often it's accompanied with horror stories of lids popping, of really foul-tasting beer, of incredibly potent beer as well. But if you persist and work out exactly what that secret recipe is, it's also guaranteed to be an incredibly tasty way to bottle and make your own drink of choice. Here's Joel London.
Former Australian Prime Minister Bob Hawke once held the record for beer swilling, 2.5 pints in 12 seconds. The feat, he says, was to endear him to his fellow Australians more than anything he ever achieved. While more recent PMs have tried to curb Australia's drinking culture, it seems it's a hard thirst to shake. But if you're going to drink it, why not make it yourself?
We usually about 30 bottles a tank or something like that. Keeps more the extra, they just wash the damn things.
So this is my little fermenter, and it's full of a pale ale at the moment, which we're about to bottle. Lucas is over there washing the bottle, so you can probably hear. And after we bottle that, we're going to start a new batch. And the way that you do it is you sterilise the tank, so you fill it with the kind of toxic-y bleach stuff for a day, and then you let it sit. And then after that, you drain it out through the spout. Then you get your kit, which we're going to do. I think we're going to do a stout with a licorice stout. So we put the kit in, and it's basically you add some sugary stuff, like you can use dextrose, or you can use a brew enhancer, or for darker beers it's good to use like a malt blend. And then we're going to add some licorice extract, fill it with water, like you dissolve that with hot water, fill it with water up to the mark, so it's a cooler temperature, so when you add your brewer's yeast, the yeast doesn't die. And then you add your yeast, you seal up the tank, you put your airlock on, and then you wait.
This is Kegan Lucas. They've been homebrewing for a while, and they're thinking of taking it to the next level, distilling spirits.
I started brewing beer about a year ago. I did an artist residency at the Fraser Studios, which are based in the old Kent Brewery in Chippendale. Everyone around Sydney sort of knows that huge hole that's been left by the development that's in progress. And part of the proposal with the development involved having temporary artist studios there. So I had a studio there for 3 months, and I decided that my project would be to brew the last beer ever brewed at the brewery. And, of course, the brand name is Kegs.
Because that's your name.
Yep, that's it. Yeah, I haven't stopped brewing since then, actually. So that wasn't the first time I'd ever brewed beer, and now I'm kind of addicted to it. I just really like... when I was... The first lot I brewed, I gathered all these long-neck bottles of, you know, over a couple of weeks. It didn't take long to gather them, and... You know, instead of filling up a recycling bin, I was kind of washing them out and reusing them. And the amount of energy that is put into creating a whole bottle really got to me. And I was like, this is such an incredible way to reuse things. It's like the amount, all I'm sort of getting new is that little top. And then I'm just refilling them. And, you know, everyone around me drinks so much beer. It's kind of really nice to reduce our waste by that much. So I live in a shopfront on Elizabeth Street. It's called Grub, and we're just sort of starting up to have events here, and we have screenings and some gigs and things like that. And part of that kind of informal DIY spaces that happen in Sydney is there's always like an informal bar. And so it's nice to sort of be able to serve people your own home brews and, you know, kind of have it by donation, so, you know, if no one has any money, they can still drink the beer, but, you know, if they do, they can sort of throw in for the next lot to be brewed. No, the fermenting bit in the tank is really quick, and then once you've bottled it, you've got to wait about 6 weeks minimum, I reckon, and then in the bottles.
So you couldn't actually drink this tonight?
No. No, it's not alcoholic either yet, because when you bottle it, you're bottling it with a further amount of sugar, and then that sugar does its thing over the 6 weeks. Like, you can see the bottles over here. This is like one that we've only bottled like about a week ago, and you can still see how it's got a lot of sediment in the bottom, but after 6 weeks it should all be gone like this. See how that one's clear? So that one's kind of ready.
So will you have enough beer for tonight?
I hope so.
Joel London with the finer tips about DIY home brewing. You are listening to All The Best this morning, where we are talking all about secret recipes. And we want to hear your secret recipes. It might be a story, it might be some ingredients. Text us in on 0409 945 945. And while I'm talking to you and playing these stories about food and about secret recipes, Bunny is in the kitchen cooking me a very special secret recipe of his own from Nepal that we will be sharing on air in a little bit later. And I just ducked out to get another CD, and I could see that Luke Rodley from The Weekend Overhang has got his hands in the bowl, and he is learning Bunny's secret recipe. So this morning on FBI in the station, we're not just broadcasting radio, we're also turned into an impromptu cooking school. So let us know if you've got any tips for cooking. For secret recipes, 0409 945 945.
तर मुम्बाट बस्नु कहिले सक्दैन र रातभरमा खाना कहिले पस्दैन तर फेरि फिर्ता आउँछन् मोमो नेमक गाउँछन् अचार भेर भए केचपसँग भैन खान्छन् हाम्रो भान्सामा धेरै धेरै रमाउँछन्
I've got a hunch that my producer has thrown that track in there as a little bit of a hint about what might be happening a little bit later, or what's happening in the kitchen right now in FBI Radio. Bunny is cooking a special meal to share on air in about 15 minutes' time. So keep listening to All The Best to find out exactly what that meal is, what that dish is, and what the story behind it is as well. My name is Jesse Cox, and I'm filling in for Eliza Silos this morning on All The Best. And shortly we will be having a story that isn't quite as palatable as what Bunny is, I imagine, cooking right now. It's a story which is involving an ancient technique that involves drinking your own wee. It sounds bizarre, but it's a fascinating story. I'll have that very soon on All the Best. You are tuned to FBI Radio 94.5 or fbiradio.com if you're streaming online. Midnight Juggernauts with Shadows here on FBI Radio. You're tuned to All the Best.
All the Best.
Stories from Sydney.
On FBI.
Well, I came across this therapy for the first time 10 years ago. And I was working at an Ayurvedic hospital in a very small village in India. And every now and again, I would take a break. So I would take a break and go to Goa. And I actually found this practice through hippies in Goa, not through the doctors. And they didn't tell me a lot about it. Not a lot of people are willing to talk about this practice. So they didn't say too much. They just said to me, oh, it's something that we do and it promotes longevity and it promotes youthfulness and it promotes strong energy. It helps you build your energy stronger. And that's all I knew, really. And I thought, okay, that sounds pretty good. I'll try that. And I had no idea that my life was going to just be turned upside down by this therapy.
This is Natalia, who lives in Bygola with her two small children and her husband. She works for a yoga studio and a coffee shop in the area. She's got a background in psychology and also Ayurvedic therapy. That's the traditional medicine of India. It's what we'd call here naturopathy, and they share quite similar elements in it. Now, the therapy she was just talking about, it, you heard correctly, it basically involves drinking your own wee. And Natalia tells us that it completely turned her life upside down. She says it's not an alternative to medicine so much as a yoga cleansing technique, and it's been one that has been passed down by the yogis over centuries to purify the body's toxins. The idea of it is that you drink your own wee, and when you feed your wee back into your own system, it's like giving your body a map of itself. It's telling your body all the information it needs to know. It's called a Shivandu technique, which translates from Hindi to the water of Shivu, which is a god, and this makes urine the equal to holy water. It sounds a little bit nuts, but Natalia swears by it and has been drinking this sacred water of hers for 10 years now.
My first time tasting urine was in Goa when I was staying with a friend in his home, and we started together. And I remember the first, I just peed in a glass literally and went to the bathroom and swallowed, took one mouthful and almost gagged. Like I literally thought I was going to vomit. It was that bad. It took me a long time to get my head around that this taste is actually okay. It's not too bad. So for a long time, I was still, it didn't put me off trying, of attempting the therapy. And I was adamant I was going to stick to it. I'm a very strong-minded person. So I thought, okay, I can't bear the taste of it, but I still want to do it. I don't want to compromise the purity of it. So for a long time, I actually used a syringe. I used a syringe without the needle, of course, and I used to squirt it at the back of my throat so I didn't have to taste it. And I stuck to it every day for a good, you know, a good, I don't know, maybe 18 months I did it like that until it just became normal to me.
So why are we talking about wee this morning on All the Best? And more importantly, where do we find this amazing treatment of drinking your own wee? Well, two of our youngest contributors, brothers Liam and Dieter, came to our latest programming meeting. They were talking about secret recipes, and they said, well, our grandfather once tried this therapy, which was urine therapy. Their grandfather was a tall, athletic man. He didn't smoke or drink. He was a total health freak. Yet, when he was 61, he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. He tried everything. He took special herbal teas from Germany that cost hundreds of dollars. He drank a special juice that came from America, which also cost a lot of money. He tried also the more traditional forms of treatment, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and finally surgery. And then, when none of this was working, he also heard about this urine therapy. And Liam and Dieter grew up with this knowledge of that this was the therapy that their grandfather had turned to at the very last moment. Unfortunately, it's very sad, he died, and Liam and Dieter, when they're about 6 years old, but it is the story of their grandfather's quest to find out all these possible treatments that inspired Liam and Dieter to find Natalia and talk to her about this therapy. And Liam and Dieter's grandfather's story is a pretty similar one of the different people that come to Natalia seeking out not necessarily this treatment, but they're often at the end of the road and are really desperate to search for new alternative medicines. So as Liam and Dieter searched for the story about their grandfather, they also found the story about Natalia and this amazing, quite incredible, bizarre technique.
My first time tasting urine was in Goa when I was staying with a friend in his home, and we started together. And I remember the first, I just peed in a glass literally and went to the bathroom and swallowed, took one mouthful and almost gagged. Like I literally thought I was gonna vomit. It was that bad. It took me a long time to get my head around that this taste is actually okay. It's not too bad. So for a long time, I was still, it didn't put me off trying. Of attempting the therapy, and I was adamant I was going to stick to it. I'm a very strong-minded person. So I thought, okay, I can't bear the taste of it, but I still want to do it. I don't want to compromise the purity of it. So for a long time, I actually used a syringe. I used a syringe without the needle, of course, and I used to squirt it at the back of my throat so I didn't have to taste it. And I stuck to it every day for a good, you know, a good, I don't know, maybe 18 months I did it like that until it just became normal to me. My daily ritual is, I'll wake up normally, go to the bathroom like everybody else, and catch the midstream of my urine first thing in the morning in a glass. I'll usually just ingest that straight back in, brush my teeth, have my shower. It's pretty simple. I get a lot of emails from people all over the world who are very lost for answers, and where they've got a situation where really the medical profession cannot help. Never leave her, never leave her. Take it home. Some people come to me, they've already known about it, so they're quite open. Some people see me for years before I feel like they're actually ready to even consider this. So by that stage, by the time I approach them with the possibility of having this therapy, they've already, you know, they've known me enough to trust me and keep an open mind. Some people, I feel like when they come to see me, that's what they're there for, but they don't know it. And they're the ones the most shocked. And I usually ask them, okay, you know, there's a few ways that we can treat you for this, whatever is going on in their life or in their body. How unconventional do you want to be? And even the ones that say, oh yes, you know, I'm very open, I'm very unconventional, when I pull out this card, they usually at least laugh or fall, you know, if not fall off the chair. The most important point in this, let's use the word recipe in inverted commas, is the importance of having a really pure diet, because what you're doing is you're actually recycling what you're putting into your body. So the purity of it is of highest importance. For it to be most effective, I think we can just pretty much sum it up as vegetarian, low SCD diet, high, mostly organics, of course. To describe the taste, I cannot think of any other substance that even resembles it. Tastes like pee.
A very frank ending there from Italia, who was telling us about the ancient yogic technique of urine therapy, drinking your own wee for health purposes. That story there was produced by Liam and Dita. You are tuned to All the Best. This is the Middle East with Hunger Song. I think it's fitting that we're playing Hunger Song, because I have been promising that Bunny is going to be cooking for me, and, well, in just a moment, this hunger song will bring in the momos, I think. That'll be great. Okay, well, I'm going to go see what's in the kitchen. The FBI studio has never smelt this good, I have to say. It smells absolutely amazing. And the reason it smells amazing is because Bunny has been cooking this incredible Nepalese dish for me all this morning. We've been talking about secret recipes. You're hearing in the background the Middle East hunger song. And this plate is in front of me and it looks amazing. Bunny, welcome to All the Best. Thank you so much for joining us and cooking. And can you please just describe this incredible feast that you've put in front of me here?
It's pretty simple, actually. I've got momos there, so I made vegetarian momos. So you got mushrooms, some cabbages,
okay,
garlic herb.
I'm gonna have a little taste here.
Yep. And you got two sauces there. You can see the white one, that's with cottage cheese and chives.
All right, I don't think I've ever eaten on radio before. I'm not sure what this is going to sound like, but you're probably going to hear lots of eating sounds. So this is the mushroom one with the cottage cheese and chives,
yeah.
While Jesse is
chewing into the microphone.
Chewing, I suppose it's Luke Rodley here, by the way, just in case there's this strange voice coming in. I have been helping Bunny and PJ make these, and I had an attempt and I absolutely sucked. So hopefully you're eating one of the ones that Bunny made.
Whatever I'm eating is tasting amazing. Now, Bunny, we heard your story at the beginning of the show, that this is a food that reminds you of Nepal, yep, as well. How regularly do you cook this?
Once a week at least.
And is that, sorry, I've got a mouthful. How can I ask questions when I've got a mouthful? I'm going to hand this around. Luke, you start eating that as well, because I've got to ask Bunny some questions.
All right.
So you cook this once a week.
And at least, yeah.
When you're cooking it, what do you think of? What does it remind you of?
My mum back home, and more than just remind me of things, is like we do it as friends, you know. Hey, let's eat momos. 10 people will turn up.
And do you all come and bring your own recipe? Do you put your own mixtures in?
Every house we go to will have something different that they like to do with it. And then the rest, everybody helps him to fold them, cook them, and just keeps going and going. So like with my friends, there's like 6-7 boys, some of them with their partners' wives. We'll go through at least 3-4 kilos of meat in a sitting, because you just...
3-4 kilos?
Yeah, easy.
And Luke, now, you were meant to be going home and catching up on some sleep, but you stayed around and we're learning how to cook these. Can you shed a little bit of light about this secret recipe?
Well, I've got to say, I think they're the new hipster food. You know, dumplings move over. I think Momos have got a little bit of... they've got a little bit of different kind of thing going on for them. I couldn't really fold the... It's kind of like the wonton wrapper. I couldn't really fold the wonton wrapper very well. Bonnie's a bit of an expert. But I can see myself making these at home. They're really good. And from what it seems, pretty healthy.
And easy to make.
We will put a recipe up on our website. You can probably hear all of us kind of just chewing and clearing our mouths. We're going to go and eat more of Bunny's Momos. Bunny, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks also to all our other guests on All the Best this morning. Thank you to our contributors, Joel London, Adam Zwee, Liam and Dita Neerham. You can check out our podcast, fbiradio.com. You can also follow us on Facebook. Now, you have been hearing my voice and not Eliza's voice. This was going to be her last show for a couple of months. I'm pleased to announce that Eliza and her partner Alex are expecting a baby very, very soon. So she's taking a couple of months maternity leave. We look forward to her return with a beautiful little baby. So until then, you will be hearing the wonderful voice of Imogen Semler, who will be guiding you through Story from Sydney every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. Until next week, think of Momos. Dream of Momos. We're gonna go eat some more, and we'll put that recipe on our website. Bye for now.